Welcome aboard, folks. Michael Cohen here with you on Fox Sports On the Road. We got a very special guest joining us this morning here on Fox On the Road. She was the first female NFL scout, and of course she's scouted for the New York Jets and is credited with really getting the career started for players like Mark Gastineau and Wesley Walker, and that is Connie Korber. Connie, how are you doing?
Michael, I'm doing great. How about you? So thank you for having me on.
It's great to have you on, and we're doing great here. In a way, you know, speaking to you, and we got introduced to one another through Rick Laughlin, through his show, Just Another Jets Podcast, last week. And, you know, speaking to you, it's like speaking to someone who is a big part of history. And that's exactly, and that's in a lot of ways, you are a big part of Jets history in so many different facets.
I've been very blessed from the time that my father and my uncle became the team doctors when I was like 13. My whole world changed.
Just about that. I mean, you mentioned your father was the team physician, your uncle was a team orthopedist. What was that like being a young girl growing up around football, around your father and uncle, and being so heavily involved with the Jets?
Well, as I said, I was a tomboy. I did all kinds of sports and stuff. But once that happened, I didn't know my father had his own practice. My uncle and Harry Wismer was the owner at that time. And once they invited my dad was at that time, things were very, very different. You had a doctor on the home side, which was my uncle Jim, Dr. James Nicholas, and then my dad, but there was no doctor that came with the visiting team. Things were a lot different back in the 62 and 63 when they were the Titans. And then of course they became the Jets. And then things really began to change, of course, when they drafted Joe Namath in 1965.
Yeah. You've gotten to know Joe over the years. Tell us a little more about getting to know him, especially in early on when he was, you know, a young player getting drafted by the Jets and becoming that iconic figure of Broadway Joe.
Well, I got to meet him, as I said, in 1965, they were training up at Peekskill. Mm-hmm. I did. I got a picture taken with him with this dress that my grandmother made for me, but it was just a thrill because he was, you know, this first bonus guy that made money, and Sonny Werblin had this whole thing that made him a star, but he also had this charisma that he still has to this day at age 80. And so just meeting Joe back then, and then, through the years, he would come to the house to be examined. I grew up on Babylon, Long Island, mm-hmm. and so he'd come out there. And of course, everybody would want to meet him. I was very lucky going to training camp every year and getting to know Joe. And then, of course, I became fortunate enough to work for the Jets the last 3 years that he was there with the Jets. So my friendship and and we also share a birthday, Joe and I. So
oh, wow.
May 31st. So it's very, very special through the years.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. I did not know that. That's a cool tidbit. So I guess every May 31st, you guys have that text message or phone call conversation saying wishing one another happy birthday, right?
Yes, we really do. I've always, and he said, he called me this last one. And it is when you see when you're on the phone. I was on the phone with somebody, and all of a sudden you see Joe Namath flash on your phone. You say goodbye to whoever you're talking to. Sorry. It's Joe. I'm not going to miss that phone call. And so then Joe and we talk, and he's just wonderful. I tell you, he's great. And he had, his grandkids there and his daughter. And I know even back when I was younger, it was, did you know Joe Namath? And to this day, it still is. People, all different ages, male and female, it's, do you know Joe Namath? And he is one of a kind.
I mean, what was that thrill like? I mean, for a lot of us fans, Jet fans who may not know what that felt like to watch the team win a Super Bowl, just can you take us back to that moment being a kid watching that?
I was a senior in high school.
Yeah.
You know, and before that, you heard, just like they do now, what's wrong with your Jets and blah, blah, blah,
yeah,
and all that kind of stuff. Even though Joe was the big name and the big draw, but the year of the Super Bowl, that whole year was amazing. And to be a senior in high school, and then for them to win it, and I was at the Orange Bowl for the Super Bowl and for the party afterwards. It was so exciting. It's something I feel badly that the fans have never, so many fans that aren't as old as I am, have not gotten to experience what I have experienced. Hmm. So it was wonderful. And then afterwards, of course, Joe didn't play because of his knees, but back in those days, players didn't make much except for Joe, and they would have a basketball team and nobody worried about insurance or anything like that. And they would pick up an extra $50 or $100 by playing at different high schools. So they came to my Babylon High School where I went, and they played there. And then they would all come to my house, and my mom would make, turkeys and all kinds of stuff. And we would have our parties, and everybody would, George Sauer would play the guitar, and Bake Turner, and we would all sing. And so it was Emerson Boozer, and it was a great way to grow up.
It sounds so different from what we, with the perception I think a lot of people hear about with athletes, at least the today's athletes anyway, where it's the glitz, the glamour, the celebrity. I mean, we saw it last week with, Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift, that kind of Hollywood feel. It sounds very, very different from what it was, 50 years ago.
Yeah, it really was. It was very family oriented, and everybody knew everybody, and we were always over at each other's houses. As I said, if we go over to Emerson Boozer's, and they come over there, or Ralph Baker, who was a linebacker, or just the whole neighborhood, Bill Hampton, who was the equipment man. Everybody got together. There's no such thing as security guards or anything like that, except for, as I said, Joe was different because he was such a big, huge celebrity. But the rest of the team. There wasn't anything like that, and I said it was very, it really was. And even when I got to work for the Jets, and Joe was there, it was where all these stars would come out to Hofstra University in Hempstead, where he was, and it could have been Pele. It was Sarah Jessica Parker who was playing Annie. It was the Incredible Hulk, Lou Ferrigno. I mean, you could name it. They all wanted to meet Joe Namath, and so
Absolutely.
there was always people coming out, and there were no security guards. They would come into the complex, and most of the time, I knew them. Who they were, and then whether or not, and then they could go see Joe.
Absolutely. Before you made your return to the Jets as an employee, you attended Ohio State, and you really got involved in the football team there. Can you talk more about, working, Woody Hayes giving you that opportunity, and just some of the challenges you faced early on when you were really getting to start to work more into football?
Yes, Michael. What I did was after high school, after they won the Super Bowl, I went off to an all girls college. Now they didn't give scholarships, and I played basketball. And I played 2 years there, and I went to, it was up in Massachusetts, Wheaton College. But there was just some, I didn't know what to major in. There was something missing, so I decided to transfer. So I went to The Ohio State University, and that was the best move I could have made. And while I was there, and I was president of my sorority and all that kind of stuff. I went over to the Union, which is where they ate, and I had a book called You Win with People that was by Woody Hayes, who was as for people that don't know, he was like the Nick Saban, kind of famous coach of that era. And I waited till he came out and I talked with him. He was kind of amazed with how much I knew, and he said, but why don't you come over to the stadium and we'll talk? So we went over to the stadium. And he said, you have such a passion for the game and you know so much, but right now there's nothing for, and back then there wasn't anything for women. You have to remember this is 1972. Okay, so that you were just Title IX was just going to be coming into be, and it really, there was really nothing. Phyllis George was probably the only one, and she was Miss America. She was on the pregame show. So I didn't know what I was going to do. He said, but you know what? You don't give up on your passion. You don't know where life is leading you. Keep going with what you're doing. And so he said, but I want you to come to every practice. Practice is open to you, whether it's closed to everybody else or not, to scouts. But he said, talk to the scouts, talk to the players, learn whatever you can. And I had always grown up with Walt Michaels, who was the defensive coordinator and also eventually the head coach of the Jets. He was another person that was a mentor to me. Lou Holtz became when I worked there. So I had a lot of, I was very, very lucky. And so that's how, so with after that, when I graduated in 74, I thought I was going to teach, which I got the teaching at Babylon High School, and then maybe coach girls sports. And then my father had a 50th birthday party, and Charlie Winner, who was the head coach of the Jets at that time, was there, and I was table hopping, talking to people, and we started talking. And he said, "We're building a brand new complex on Long Island. Would you consider working for the Jets?" Because he said, "I can see your passion," and that's how it all began.
I can't. I saw the video that the Jets did about you. About you, I think it was they put it out, released in. I think it was in the spring, February, March, and you spoke about how exciting it was. Even though it was just at the start, it was a receptionist job, just to be, in the facility and have an opportunity to be a part of the organization. It was just mind blowing for you. Is that correct? Can you take it back to that?
Oh, it was a dream come true. I didn't care what it was. I was still living at home at the time, and I didn't care what I was making or anything. And I, just to be there, because that was, as I said, that was my passion. I used to do my own little mock drafts. Don't even ask me how I started when I was 15 and 16. And back then, there was only one game on per week. So I always was into college football to see who there might be drafting. And I started even back then, but there was no such thing to even think about scouting or something like that. So as I said, it was so exciting. To be the receptionist. Plus, back then, a lot of people didn't have secretaries, and so they would call up. Whether it was Howard Cosell, who was not always the nicest, but most people were super nice, and there were coaches and people and everything else. But they would ask for to speak with somebody, and I would know it was if it was okay, and you would put them right through. But my biggest obstacle was I didn't know how to be a secretary. I didn't know how to type because you went to college to either to go to college or you went to maybe Catherine Gibbs to be a secretary. So I didn't know how to do shorthand. There was no such thing as Google or YouTube or anything to figure things out. So I had to kind of figure it out on my own and fake it. And luckily, I was the only girl in the building for the first couple of months. And then they hired another woman that was the head coach's secretary. So that's how it all began, and it just evolved from there. But I was very lucky because they valued who I knew and as far as people coming in the building and what was going on versus how many. And I was also filing for the scouts and doing and setting the scouts up for their trips at the same time.
Yeah, is that how it really got started with you as a scout? Was just making those files and, putting together some of that paperwork?
Yeah, they had these big books because remember there was no such thing as computers. So you had these big, and so you had to put all the different reports in from everybody at that time, and then where the scouts were and the connections at that time. And so, and I always was in the draft room. I was the one calling it into New York, which was the to the. That's why I watched the movie Draft Day about 4,000 times. And so yeah, it was. That's how it all started. And then in '75. Al Ward, who was the general manager, and Mike Holovac, who went from running back coach to become director of player personnel, they had me, it was 17 rounds, and they had me make the 17th round pick. And to this day, I'm still the only female that's done that. And then a few months later is when they came to me and said, we want you to do some scouting. It wasn't a big deal. I said yes, and that was it.
Wasn't a big deal. You just found like one of the best defensive players in Jets history. That's
That happened in 1979. So that was a couple of years later. Had different people coming in. The Jets had a lot of different changes during those years, just like now. And my boss was on the road, and a guy got hurt, Mike Stensrud from Iowa State. And so he said, "You need somebody to replace him." And a lot of the guys that were first and second round picks were already at the Senior Bowl, which to me, I love the Senior Bowl. And so I had to go searching. Now, back then, you barely had tapes. You had your reports. You had to maybe call the school, but don't forget they didn't have cell phones. So you had to find people to talk to. It was very, very different. So I kind of narrowed it down to five guys that were probably rounds 4 to 7. And that's when I decided, well, how am I going to decide on these five guys? So I decided to call them because I was very big in the interview process, which I still am to this day, to find out what kind of people they are. And so I called them on the phone. I was able to get a hold of them. And most of them were like, oh, okay, we'll consider coming to the Senior Bowl. What's it all about? All that type of stuff. One player said, "I'm ready. Just get me on the next plane. I'm ready to play football. That's all I want to do." Just the enthusiasm and the attitude just sold me. So I went back and I looked. It was a guy named Mark Gastineau who happened to run a 4.55 40 at 270 pounds and 6'5". But I loved his passion on top of it. So I went to Walt Michaels, who was the head coach, and said, "This is who I recommend." He took it because we were coaching the North squad and went down there, and Gastineau just tore it up. He was unbelievable. He got the MVP of the North squad defensive player. Marty Lyons, who we drafted in the first round, got the MVP of the South squad in 1979. So I was a very successful Senior Bowl.
That was a very good Senior Bowl. I mean, it kind of puts. Speaking of Senior Bowls, I at least in recent times anyway, when the Jets were the team at the Senior Bowl, at least the coaches were, just a couple years ago, they ended up with one of their best draft classes with guys like Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson. And here you just mentioned it here with going back to the '79 with Gastineau and Marty Lyons. I mean, it doesn't get better than that.
Isn't it amazing that all these years later, in fact, I was honored at the Hula Bowl for being the first female scout. And Phil Savage, who's the assistant to Joe Douglas, he came up to me and said, "Are you going down to the Senior Bowl that year that the Jets were finally coaching 30 some odd years later?" And he said, "Are you going?" I said, "No." He goes, "You have to go." He said, "Because that was the thing with you and Gastineau." So we went down and we ended up with, we got Ruckert from that draft, and we got Jermaine Johnson from from the Senior Bowl. We drafted three guys again from the Senior Bowl. So again, it was very successful.
Very. I know that the people, some fans say, well, it's a Senior Bowl. It means you have to be a bad team the year before. True, but if it does work out at the end of the day.
Yeah, and now they ch for the first day last year they changed the rules. They no longer are taking just a team. I guess they're taking different coaches from different things and giving them opportunities. But for all those years, it was always you couldn't. I forget what they had these different rules that qualified you. But we finally did qualify, For you have you may be a losing team, but you can't have a change in coaches and things like that. So we finally got in there. So it was really great, though.
Before we move on to just some of your thoughts about the current version of the Jets, Wesley Walker, I understand, was also one of the players you scouted. Is that correct?
I did some scouting on him, but he wasn't like I didn't get to choose him per se. I did a lot of looking at a lot of players, but Wesley was with Marvin Powell. That was probably, other than the draft that Joe Douglas had with with the Jermaine and the Breece and the Garrett and everybody, that whole draft, 1977 was the best draft. And that was done by a guy named Mike Holovac, who was amazing. That was my boy, who was unbelievable at judging talent. Remember now, you didn't have pre-draft physicals, you didn't have the combine, you didn't have computers, all these different things. But we ended up with, Marvin Powell. And Wesley Walker, Matt Robinson, Joe Klecko, Dan Alexander, Kevin Long, Scotty Durkin. I mean, it was an amazing draft.
That is amazing. Why do you think? It's the biggest crapshoot. We all know that. All the sports. I mean, every sport has its gambles as far as drafting is concerned. I mean, baseball, you could draft someone from the, 300th round and you end up being a Hall of Famer. But why is it that so many people seem to get it wrong? I mean, like a Trey Lance is an example. This last couple of years with San Francisco. Why does this happen so often for teams?
Because, in my opinion, this is my opinion, it's in an exact science. It's something you can't always measure the heart, number one, how much they love the sport, how they, and nowadays also, even more than back then, is there's so many different schemes. Now, do they fit into this type of coach's, West Coast offense, this and that? Every coach has their own way. And sometimes you'll see how guys will excel with one team and not another. And sometimes it can be just because of the scheme, but a lot of times it is the interview, and it's not because there are always little angels or not angels or whatever. There's just different things about how much they love the game of football, how much work they want to put in. As I said, do they fit in? So it's very inexact. And I think also that whole year with Trey Lance and Zach Wilson, that was a COVID year. There was no combine that year
That's true.
too, and there were no, remember, they weren't allowed to have personal interviews. They were only allowed a certain amount of players that they could examine physically, or medically. There were a lot of different things that year, so that was even more difficult with the way things are now. So I think that COVID year kind of made it even, more difficult. But I think also the game has changed. So now you got, back in my day, in the old days, the quarterback you measured by his thought process, how fast he got back. Nobody did shotgun. As Joe Namath said, he never did shotgun in his life. So now you got shotgun, you got under center, you've got progressions. Also now they want you to extend plays off platform. Back when, again, with us, you could hit the quarterback, but they wanted you to be able to stand in the pocket and take a smash in the mouth. Well, now you can't touch the quarterback high, you can't touch the quarterback low. So again, they're looking at different things now. So they're looking more at mobility. Back then, in those days, they weren't. And yet, one thing that I noticed, I look back at Flacco and Eli and Peyton and Brady and even Breeze to some degree. Almost all of them played 10 years without ever getting. Brady had one injury, but the rest of them had very few injuries. And now we've already had, last year we had the most quarterbacks getting hurt and different quarterbacks playing, 68. For 32 teams. Already this year, we've had six quarterbacks that didn't start have to come in because of injuries already, and we're only in game four. So, as I said, I think it's very interesting now, and I don't know if it's because there's lack of in the preseason where they don't hit anymore. And we used to play, we used to have 2-a-days, full pads, and then all of a sudden you start playing again, and the body's not used to it. I don't know what the answer is. To tell you the truth, but it is interesting to watch and see the injuries and the type of injuries.
It is, and even players who are really good players getting off to very slow starts. I mean, Dalvin Cook, we're seeing it right now with him. He didn't have much of a training camp. Was basically holding out for a contract and gets the contract late with the Jets. Doesn't really get practicing until like the third or fourth week of August, and he's been very slow out of the gate. Now, not saying that he won't pick it up at some point, but that does have an effect.
I think it does too. Fitting it, as you say, fitting it again, fitting in with the scheme and the injury and not playing at all. So I do. I think that has a, there's so many different things now that go on, but it's always going to be an inexact science. I mean, as I said, it, and then different people, like the starting tackle for the Dallas Cowboys, Chuma Adoga. You know, he didn't make it with us, but here he is. He's starting with the Dallas Cowboys. And there's so many players I can go around the league. And then, of course, 40% of the players basically are either seventh round to undrafted
Yeah,
free
but
agents.
yeah.
So again, you know, why is Pacheco a seventh round pick?
Yeah, I mean, Brock Purdy is another example, right? I mean,
Brock
also,
Purdy, exactly.
yeah. The guy might be the next Tom Brady. Who knows? I mean, he was a seventh round pick. You never know. It's just you never know.
No.
Yes, you know, it's funny because a week ago when we were talking on Rick's show, we were talking about, you know, the state of team and leadership and, you know, accountability, and, you know, we. I don't think anybody knew what to expect really in the Kansas City game, and then we see it unfold. We see a team that, even though the Jets never had a lead in the game, to come back from 17 down to tie the game, to have multiple chances to win the game, they probably should have won the game, as far as I'm concerned, as far as that pass interference is concerned. It feels like the narrative kind of changed last week. How do you feel about the team right now after what we saw against Kansas City as they head now for Denver?
Well, I thought that wasn't really was. I mean, we really started out slow. Every game so far this year, that's the only thing that bothers me. Every game this year, even the defense, which is good, just until something happens, like the safety or the week before that, when they did the dirty hit on Mosley and it got everybody riled. So we got to come out right in the beginning. But other than that, I was very happy for Zach. You know, as I said, whether he's the answer or not, what that kid has been through. Coming from, you know, BYU and coming here to New York, New Jersey, and then all the things that happened to him last year and the guys with the t-shirt and everything else, and then having to and never, you know, answering back like you just saw what the Giant player did yesterday, right? Okay. And speaking, and that's one thing you didn't see, you know, Zach Wilson do at all, and he's been through a lot. So it was so nice to see that happen. We know he has the arm, we know he has mobility. It's a matter of confidence. Can he, you know, progression, all that stuff. So as I said, this weekend to me is going to be the telling game. I loved what happened last week, even though we lost. I really, again, I do feel the refs really that was holding on that they didn't call when Jermaine was being, and then the other part where they, oh,
There was a
so.
lot of penalties. I mean, they could have gotten Pacheco on a couple of unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. They didn't throw them, and it was ridiculous.
I know it was. Everybody's
yeah.
still. It's funny because it's everybody's still mad. I'm on Twitter and people are still talking. I've never seen that happen where on Thursday, people are still talking about that. Usually
Yeah.
by, you know, Tuesday, everybody's moved on. I mean, the players have, but the fans haven't.
They have.
And so I think, and also this is a big game because of what Peyton said about Nathaniel Hackett. So I am hoping that these players, you know, they always like to play with a chip on their shoulder. I hope they take the chip for Nathaniel Hackett and go to town on Denver because of what, you know, Sean Payton said in the summer. Take that you and use that to get us started in the first quarter.
Yeah. Do you like what I mean, I certainly like what he's been doing, but do you like the way Robert Saleh has handled this? I mean, he's going through a lot. I mean, when you talk about, you know, having Zach Wilson be your guy, and then you're bringing Aaron Rodgers, and you're thinking, okay, this is going to be great. We're going to have this Hall of Fame quarterback. You lose him, and now you're kind of going back to where you were last year, where you're trying to stick with the young quarterback who's struggling, as well as trying to fend off the media. I mean,
Yes.
he's done an outstanding job in that regard. What do you think about the job he's doing?
Yeah, I think, well, it's a very tough situation because, as I said, that was a 6 month buildup with Aaron from the time he signed to everything with Hard Knocks, to all the fans at training camp, to everything. And then 4 plays in, I mean, it was much more than just a normal injury on a regular team. So, yes. And you know, the fact that he keeps, you know, he's still backing, you know, Zach and working, I think it's great. And I'm a big Joe Douglas fan. So, but you know, the hard part with the Jets is people don't have patience nowadays. And it's really, really hard. Just like every 2 years, okay, here we go again. We got to meet somebody new. We got to, you know, the whole thing. So, and with social media, I love social media. I'm on Twitter all the time and everything else. But, you know, it still makes it. It magnifies everything 10 times. What you say, every word that you say, if you say something wrong, in the old days, you might say something silly, but you had one little show at night and then it was forgotten. Then you go on to the next, you know, game. And now everything gets blown up. That's the way it is now. I mean, that's just part of life, I guess, now.
Yeah, it is. I mean, example of, And an example of that is, on the other sport, baseball. The Mets, firing Buck Showalter, and you're thinking, Buck Showalter is going to be that guy for them. It's going to be around for a few more years. Give him some stability. And oh, here we go again. It's 2 years. Here's another manager. 2 years. Here's another manager. You can't win that way,
No, and
No.
that's what's really hard, to have that kind of patience. And the players are more outspoken. Everybody, the fans are more outspoken, and sometimes more, there's so much, this is me, I'm an old lady, so you got to remember. So the vulgarity and stuff like that. So there's just none of that thing where people can say, let's just take it easy and let's be a little, have a little bit of kindness and patience. I mean, I get mad during the game too, but it does. It's hard because there isn't always an answer, and everybody thinks the next thing is the answer, of course.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers, do you think he do you think he, is he do you think do you believe what he's saying, that he says he believes he could be back by January? I mean, if the Jets can make the playoffs, obviously.
I don't know about that. I really don't know medically. So I really don't. And I don't want to even venture a guess, but all I know is he is such a leader. And what he did and the way he acted with this team and everything, I mean, it was so different than what you heard about in Green Bay, right? He came here and he embraced everything, and the players responded to him. It's really been amazing. When I met him at training camp, he just couldn't have been nicer. And it wasn't like hi, goodbye. He spent 15, 20 minutes talking to me, and he didn't have to do that. And so, as I said, it was just so hard when that happened. I worried. As soon as he got the calf injury, it scared me to death.
Yeah. I mean, even when he went to the preseason game against the Giants, like, please just get out of there healthy, get out of there healthy.
I know,
But.
I know. Because you can see how Joe Burrow, Joe Burrow is being affected in
Oh,
Indianapolis.
absolutely. Yeah.
So poor guy. I mean, gee whiz, that calf thing is really difficult. And so, but I as I said, I just think Aaron coming back into town was great.
Yeah. I mean, he gave the, I think he lifted their spirits up a little bit and was a big part of that. And from what I understand, he's going to come back as soon as he's, I guess, fully cleared. I guess that's coming up in November or something like that. And then he's going to be with the team for the rest of the season, at
Okay.
least from that standpoint. So that's going to be good for them if they can get on a roll. And I think the schedule is going to start to ease up a little bit after that Eagle game where they can make that roll happen. We'll see.
I know, game by game, because sometimes you play a team and they don't have their quarter. You think it's going to be a tough game and they don't have half their players, or you think it's going to be an easy game and they just are on a hot streak. You never really know. That's what's so amazing about football. You got to be ready to play. Anytime you take a team for granted that you're playing, you see what happens. People all of a sudden, like when the Cardinals, beating the Cowboys and different things. You just never know. I mean, we really did Mahomes pretty good last game. I never saw him look like that at all.
Never. I mentioned to a friend, like, even Bill Belichick hasn't gotten that frustrated.
It was amazing, those little lob passes. And as I said, if the refs had made that call, I mean, just third and 22, third and 25, third and eight, oh, just gets me.
Yeah. Well, Connie, again, this was a pleasure to have you on. It really was. Like I said to you at the start, speaking to you is like speaking to the history, speaking to someone who's so deeply intertwined with the franchise and is the franchise in a lot of ways. I mean, you next to Joe Namath are the faces of the franchise in a lot of ways,
You're
you
too kind. I've
know.
been, but I have just been really blessed through my life, and I love sharing it with people and fans, and seeing everybody. And I think that's why I enjoy the social media and getting to know everybody. And as I said, I've been very blessed, and I know it through my life. And the Jets have always basically, my husband had to put up with it for 40 years, and until he passed it, that they were my life. And luckily, my son's a big Jet fan, and my stepdaughter too. So I'm very, very lucky.
Connie, again, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Michael. Thank you so much for having me on. And I enjoy all your stuff too.
Thank you.